And welcome to Midday. Dan Roderick's here.
Thanks again for joining us. While he was raising two normal teenage boys who turned into responsible adults, a friend of mine often asked himself why the boys used to do some of the most incredibly stupid things he'd ever seen as teenagers. And after a while, he could come up with only one explanation. Because, he would grumble, they're idiots. Our next guest says there's a lot more to teenagers than that. Dr. Daniel Siegel, a neuropsychiatrist and clinical professor at UCLA, says that popular culture notwithstanding, there's nothing wrong with teenagers. They are not merely children who've been kidnapped by raging hormones for a few years, after which, around their 18th or 20th birthdays, they magically turn into something resembling an adult human being. In fact, Dr. Siegel says, research indicates that adolescents can extend well into their 20s. Teenagers, he says, are going through a period where their brains are literally being rewired every day as the neural pathways of childhood are gradually pruned into highways that better accommodate adult thinking. At the same time, he says, adolescents are particularly sensitive to the rise and fall of dopamine, the chemical that produces feelings of pleasure in the brain. Along with other physical and chemical changes, these can lead to kind of risk-taking, anxiety, angst, moodiness, acting out that even well-adjusted teens are bound to exhibit. They also account for teenage susceptibility to smoking, alcohol, and drug addiction, as well as a variety of mood disorders. This intense neural chemical activity amounts to nothing less than a brainstorm, which is the title of Dr. Siegel's latest book, a sort of owner's manual that the author describes as a guide for parents and teen alike. The upside of this break with childhood is that teenagers are experiencing a burst of energy, creativity, and discovery that may be unmatched in their adult years. By understanding what's going on under the hood, then, Dr. Siegel argues smart parents and other adults can work on motivating teens toward useful goals rather than strictly trying to control their behavior. Daniel Siegel is a clinical professor of psychiatry at the UCLA School of Medicine. He's on the faculty of its Center for Culture, Brain, and Development and the founding co-director of the Mindful Awareness Research Center. A prolific author and lecturer, he's written numerous academic articles, as well as several popular books for parents, including, you might know these titles, Parenting from the Inside Out and The Whole Brain Child. Having survived the adolescence of two of his own children, he's written a new guide for parents and teenagers alike called Brainstorm, The Power and Purpose of the Teenage Brain. It's available in paperback from Tarcher. Tarcher is a Penguin imprint. If you're puzzled by your teenager, it's a very accessible book that's full of useful tips for parents and kids alike. Dr. Siegel, thanks for taking time to visit us on Midday and WYPR. It's nice to get to speak with you.
A pleasure to be here with you. Thank you for having me.
I have so many questions for you, and I was trying to decide which one to start with. I'm going to start with something I've kind of alluded to already in my introduction. You do a lot of myth-busting in this book, and one of the big myths about teenagers is that there's something basically wrong with them, with adolescents, something they have to be cured of, either by time, waiting it out, or by therapy. So let's talk about that a little bit, these ideas that we already have about teenagers.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, your introduction and summary was so beautiful. I don't know if I can add much to it. It was just so nicely done.
We have a whole hour together, Dr. Siegel.
I'm so happy. I'm so happy. You know, here's what happened with us. You know, my wife and I have two adolescents. They're actually in their early 20s. And we wanted to know kind of what happened during that period. And so we, like so many parents, can get baffled by what teenagers go through and notice that some of those confusing behaviors continue into the 20s. So I, as a neuropsychiatrist, wanted to explore what did we know from science about the adolescent period. And the first thing that I discovered was that the science of adolescence, which is really blossoming in the last 15 years since we've been able to look underneath the skull at the healthy, active brain of all sorts of people, including adolescents, And we discovered things we just didn't know before. And those discoveries gave us insights that are so profoundly different from what the popular books tell us and what even physicians tell us or what the media tells us. These myths that we all hear as parents, raging hormones, it's a horrible period. Your friend called it a time of idiocy.
Mm-hmm.
A French journalist recently interviewed me and said in France they call it the period of insanity. You know, these are all insulting comments that we can sort of understand it because when we as adults don't make sense of it, we call it idiocy and insanity. But in fact, when you look at what's actually going on in the brain, you can have a transformation as an adult of how you see what's going on. And the reason I wrote the book also for adolescents was that as an adolescent, if you're told about what's going on in your brain versus the story that you're an idiot or you're insane or you're just consumed by raging hormones that are driving you mad, all those statements, there's basically nothing you can do about it. But if you know that it's the brain and you learn the specifics of it, here's what we know. Here's fact number one for our talk today. You know, you can use the focus of your mind to actually change the function and even the structure of your brain. So the first great piece of news from a study called neuroplasticity is how we can use the focus of our mind to change the function and structure of the brain. When an adolescent learns this, they can actually change the course of their adolescence. And when we look at the specifics of what happens in the brain, which we can do, then you can actually be very specific about what to do with your mind to actually strengthen your brain and minimize the downsides of adolescence, which do include risk and things like that, and confusing emotions and thoughts and behaviors. But you can use your mind to actually create the upside of all those different risks that we have.
Let me push you on that and ask you a little bit about that then. You're a parent dealing with a 17-year-old, I'll say a 17-year-old girl who's going through some sort of stressful episode regarding a boyfriend or gossip at school or those things that happen in adolescent life, a stressful exam coming up. The child is acting out at home, expressing anger, refusing to speak to the parents very much. I mean, this is some, what I'm describing here is not all that unusual. And the parents are both getting upset, wondering what to do. There's actually angry exchanges back and forth between the daughter and the parents. So how do you get that child, that's still a child, 17-year-old girl, into that state of mindfulness that you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, the first thing to say is, and the way you're pointing it out is so helpful, the interaction that the parent and the adolescent engages in is going to really shape how things unfold for both of them. You know, and so in the book, what I try to do is talk about something called presence. And presence is this amazing way of just being aware of what's happening as it's happening without being judgmental and without being swept up by reactivity. So in the case you're talking about here, a 17-year-old is facing the stress of an exam. A parent is getting frustrated with them and interacts with them in a way that makes the adolescent's frustration intensify. The parent's reaction gets more intense, and they're off to the races, you know, with this big conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I wrote a book, and I was amazed when I looked at all the books that are written for adolescents, there's not a single one, I mean, until the Brainstorm book, that allow both adolescent and adult to read it together. So in terms of your question, what can we do? If you understand the basics of what's happening in the brain, which includes this remodeling of the brain, so it's not raging hormones. The hormones rise with puberty, for sure. But the remodeling of the brain is something that surprised everyone. And that includes a way where you're carving away connections and strengthening connections that remain. So it's if you imagine literally a home where in the first dozen years of life or so, you're building the basic foundation, and that's childhood. Then adolescence, instead of just continuing to build the home, it's actually taking that foundation and restructuring it. This includes a thing called pruning, where you're carving away, and myelinating. Myelin is the sheath, the healthy sheath that allows the remaining neurons that are connected to each other to communicate more effectively in a more coordinated, balanced way, actually 3,000 times more efficiently they can communicate with each other. So pruning is important because it specializes areas of the brain, and myelinating is important because it makes the coordination and balance, what's called the integration of the brain, much deeper. So during the remodeling of a home, if you can picture this, not all the systems, the plumbing, the electricity, all the ways in which the home will eventually work well, sometimes they go offline during the reconstruction period. When a parent understands this, they can give a little more space to an adolescent, which makes all the difference, even just taking a pause and literally being present for what's happening rather than reactive and judgmental to what's happening. So that's the first step for a parent. For an adolescent, if I'm an adolescent, and I wrote this book and sent it out to many adolescents who gave me feedback, I rewrote it, they gave me more feedback, I rewrote it again. So the version that's out, the final version, was, you know, test-driven by many adolescents so that it was useful for them, and there are lots of exercises. Instead of just saying, oh, I have an emotion, that's the end of it, what the book teaches are these things called mind-sight skills, and mind-sight is a word I made up a long time ago when I myself was an adolescent and dropped out of medical school for a while because I noticed my teachers didn't see that their patients had feelings or stories about their lives or the meaning of, let's say, an illness. I was in medical school, and so I dropped out. I didn't want to become like that. I was just like 20, I don't know how, 22 at the time. When I went back, I made up this word mindsight, meaning how do you actually know that we're more than just a bag of chemicals, that we have an internal mental life, a subjective set of feelings and hopes and dreams? So mindsight is taught throughout the Brainstorm book, and for an adolescent to learn these mindset skills, it would be like this. Okay, I'm that 17-year-old adolescent girl. I'm facing an exam. My mom is really pressuring me. I'm feeling really tense. I'm feeling really, really anxious. I've got issues with my boyfriend. I didn't sleep so well because we were in a fight last night because I'm not going to go to the party because I wanted to study or whatever the issue was.
Right.
You know, I need to know, how do my feelings during this adolescent period of mine from 12 to 24, how are they actually rising up from my body and my lower areas of my brain and pounding on my higher part, the cortex, so that my thinking is much more influenced by emotion as an adolescent than and as an adult or a child? When I learn that, instead of avoiding these waves of emotion, I learn how to surf them. And that's what mindsight allows you to do. So for this young woman, I would have taught her, if she was reading the book, you know, how to actually take an emotional state, get to know it well, and rather than just being swamped by it as a wave crushes you on the surf, you actually learn to ride it. And she would have learned that skill. And she would say to her mom, "Mom, I know you're feeling angry with me or irritated with me because you thought this and this. But, you know, let's take a pause, let's take a break, and let's just rewind and start over again." And if the mother were reading the book too, the two of them would be able to be just present for what's happening, and you'd be able to come up with the optimal solution for her test studies, her issue with her boyfriend, her relationship with her mom. And instead of just being reactive, we'd be receptive to each other as a family.
Boy. Could have used this book some years ago, Dr. Siegel.
Me too.
My father and I. Daniel Siegel is our guest. Dr. Dan Siegel, professor of clinical psychiatry, a neuropsychiatrist at UCLA Medical School. His book, Brainstorm, The Power and the Purpose of the Teenage Brain. And when we get back, a little bit more on this pruning and remodeling that goes on in the brain. I find this fascinating. And also for parents and for teens alike, the 90-second rule. I'm going to ask Dr. Siegel about that. A short break here on Midday. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Dan Rodericks here. Although it may come as a surprise to any parent who survived the experience, Dr. Dan Siegel argues that teenagers are more than the sum of their hormones. They're going through a period when their brains are literally being rewired every day, which can not only lead to the craziness we associate with adolescence, but also to an incredible burst of energy and creativity that continues well into their 20s. We'll continue our conversation now with Dr. Dan Siegel, author of Brainstorm, The Power and Purpose of the Teenage Brain. If you'd like to join us on midday, our phone number is 410-662-8780. Our toll-free long-distance number, 866-661-9309. You can send us a question or comment by email, midday@wypr.org. Dr. Siegel, I wanted to ask you about the 90-second rule, because it comes up in the book, and I thought it was really interesting and kind of followed the previous part of our conversation just before the break, when we were talking about how the parent and teen together can resolve, an episode of conflict and deep emotion and anxiety. The 90-second rule.
Yeah, well, Dan, it's a great rule, and the way to think about it as either an adolescent or an adult is that we have our experience of emotion, where an emotion rises, and if you just let an emotion be present without becoming reactive to it, meaning without trying to get rid of it or without trying to cling to it, so just kind of let it be there, and you can learn skills to do that. In about 90 seconds, essentially a minute and a half, this emotion will rise up. You know, I'm sad, and it'll float into your consciousness. It'll influence your thinking. It'll pull on certain memories. And then it kind of just drifts away like a wave on the shore. Anger, frustration, fear. When we get frightened of our fear or sad about our sadness or angry about our anger, then that's becoming reactive. And then an emotion can last longer than a 90-second wave that comes in and goes. It can even shape an entire mood, which is kind of a pervasive emotional state that's much longer than 90 seconds. And so part of what a mindsight skill is learning this 90-second rule. So you say, hey, I've got a space inside my own mind. If you picture kind of like a wheel, and we do this practice of a wheel of awareness that anyone can do from my website. Picture that on the wheel you have the hub of the wheel, and you have the outer rim. The rim represents something like an emotion that you can be aware of, and the hub represents the experience of knowing with an awareness. So, Dan, let's say you had an emotion of anger about something.
Mm-hmm.
Two things would be going on when that emotion rose up in you. One, the emotion itself. Two, you're knowing that the anger is rising in you. That knowing or awareness is different from the emotion. When you don't distinguish those two, you become your anger. But when you distinguish them, which is a teachable skill, it's a mindset skill, you're differentiating the knowing, the sense of awareness, from that which is known, in this case, an emotion, or it could be a thought, a memory, anything. You are empowering yourself to say, hey, there's anger. Isn't that interesting? I let it arise, and in about 90 seconds, it's going to reach its peak and kind of float away. And I say, oh, I've learned from that. And I have an acronym called COAL, COAL. I bring curiosity, openness, acceptance, and love. And you can even put learning in there, I suppose, is another L, where I learn from it. So every emotion that arises becomes my teacher, rather than my prison warden.
So you really did approach this as a manual, a how-to manual for dealing with your teenager and for a teenager dealing with parents.
Yeah, you know, when I was writing it up and sending it out for adolescents in the early days of writing the manuscript, and I got feedback back, they said, well, this is interesting, you know, but the way you say it this way pisses me off, you know, so I changed the way I said it. But they said, what's useful about this? And so I made those useful parts really stick out in gray pages that are these mindsight skill exercises. And the feedback from the adolescents who've read it has been some of the most, you know, emotional for me, emotionally rewarding, because, you know, they say, hey, you're basically telling me I'm not nuts, I'm not stupid, I'm not lazy. You know, I'm actually someone going through a remodeling period, and I'm empowered now with these skills to make this remodeling experience different. See, if someone tells you it's just raging hormones, what are you supposed to do? Like filter your blood and give anger management, you know, counseling to the raging hormones? I mean, what are you going to do? It makes you, you know, it makes you really disempowers you. And it's also insulting, I got to say. And it's also plain out destructive. So what I hope can happen with what you're doing, Dan, in this NPR show and with changing the cultural conversation about adolescence is there is, as you mentioned in the intro, this huge courage and creativity that is right there beneath the surface. But because we don't give these skills to adolescents themselves, because understandably we as parents or teachers or therapists or whoever have been told the wrong thing so we don't understand what's actually going on, we all get reactive with each other and the whole thing becomes inflammatory and disempowering and often, I mean, to be honest, really painful as a parent and as an adolescent. So my deepest hope is that, you know, this little book with its practices, it is a manual, but also it's science. It was, you know, put as a nonfiction science book in the New York Times. And it is a science book, but it's not burdened with, you know, worrying about the research or, you know, the details. It says, here's the science. Now, here's the practical implication of the science. And guess what? Here's how you apply it in your life. So everything I put in there, like the 90-second rule, is something you hear what the scientific foundation is, but then right away you say, here's what I can do with this now to improve my life and my relationships.
Dr. Dan Siegel is our guest on Midday on WYPR. His book is Brainstorm, The Power and Purpose of the Teenage Brain, an inside-out guide to the emerging adolescent mind, ages 12 to 24. And I don't want to leave the science. I want to go back to the science just for a minute to make sure I understand and so I can make sure our listeners understand. Now, this is what I understand from what you were saying, using the terms remodeling and pruning. This is what I got from what you just said and from your book. That during adolescence, the teenager's brain is losing gray matter, actual number of neurons, but gaining white matter, which makes them connect more efficiently. That's one thing I think I understand. That's
exactly.
That's the remodeling. How am I doing so far?
Beautifully.
Okay. Now, in pruning, this is interesting, too, because the brain is actually eliminating pathways it's not going to use as an adult, right? The adolescent brain is, this pruning is happening in there. And one of my questions from that is, you know, if there's something you want to do really well in life, say you're 15 and you're thinking you want to be a great, field goal kicker in football or a pianist, you should focus on that as an adolescent. That would be helpful because it's harder to pick that up later. Can you help me with that?
Exactly. And, you know, I think the reason why a lot of middle schools and high schools are starting to use Brainstorm as a textbook, and when they have me come and speak with the students from, you know, 6th grade to 12th grade, I say exactly what you just said, Dan, to them. And I say, look, you know, this is not about adults telling you what to do, because, of course, we know adolescents are hardwired to try to push against the status quo for both troubling reasons and for great reasons that we can talk about. But anyway, that being the case, I say it's really up to you as an individual to think, if there's something that matters to me, my musical skills, my athletic skills, whatever, it's a use it or lose it principle. The pruning isn't just willy-nilly. The brain is going to start specializing. That's the purpose of the pruning. That a child's brain, let's say an 8-year-old compared to an 18-year-old, an 18-year-old is accumulating more and more and more connections, kind of like a sponge soaking in information, experiences. That's all great. But if you study the way an 8-year-old processes information, literally put them in a scanner and watch the brain, you give them a challenging problem, that brain is activating everything all over the place. Mm-hmm. It's very inefficient. It takes more time. And, you know, ultimately they can come up with some answer, which is fine for an 8-year-old. An 18-year-old, in contrast, has differentiated because of the pruning. And even though they've gotten rid of not only the connections, but even many neurons, so they have fewer neurons and fewer neural connections, they've taken the ones that have remained, and then that's the pruning part to get specialized, but then they've linked them more intensely with this myelin. So it makes them 3,000 times actually more coordinated and balanced. So then when you put that kid in a scanner, an 18-year-old, same kind of problem, you know, to, relevant to their age, their brain is super efficient at quickly figuring out what the problem is, how to deal with it, how to solve it. Now, the pathway from the 8-year-old to the 18-year-old is not just 10 more years of experience. That's what shocked everyone. The pruning is pretty, you know, intense when you see it. That is, you're really letting go of previously established connections. So what I say to the kids in middle school and high school, and what the book says is, you know, listen, this is up to you. You have something that you really care about, you know, whether it's your knowledge of history or your friendships or, you know, you want to work on your music school skills, your athletic skills. It's up to you. You know, use it or lose it. You want to keep that skill going. This is the time to do it. And it's not a matter of someone telling you to do it. It's a matter of you finding your own motivation because it matters to you. Mm-hmm. And you can restructure a whole school based on this, you know, these principles of remodeling, which a number of schools are thinking of doing, where you actually capture the motivation of adolescents. And it's not only their motivation, but they have a courage and a creativity. And I think of it as the essence of adolescence. You know, there's four, if you said, what does this remodeling really mean when it comes to practical aspects of a person's life? And when you read all the science, which I've done, and then translate it for practical use, which is what the Brainstorm book does, there are four fundamental elements that come out of remodeling. And they, fortunately, can be rearranged and said in a certain way, so it spells the word essence. So the essence of adolescent remodeling spells the word essence. The first part is ES, this emotional spark. So you can teach adolescents and adults too how to actually take this passion of emotion and optimize the upsides, you know, which is this life is on fire and really exciting, and minimize the downsides, which it can be pretty upsetting when your emotions take over your thinking. So you want to learn these skills, these mindset skills, to deal optimally with that. The SE of essence is social engagement. You know, you talked about that 17-year-old and her relationship with her boyfriend. Well, in general, in adolescence, and this isn't just true with human beings, it's true across our mammalian family of animals, you know, an adolescent, as they get ready to leave home, which is one fundamental goal of adolescence, if you will, versus a child who's just learning, an adolescent is preparing for leaving. An adolescent mammal, if they aren't connected to other adolescents, they're basically going to be lunch for somebody. So there's a deep, millions-of-year-old set of circuits that says, hey, if I don't have a connection with one, two, or a group of other adolescents, I'm going to be dead. And the feeling we have to respect as adults that when an adolescent comes to us and says, Dad, Mom, I absolutely need to buy this shoe. Everybody else has got this shoe. It doesn't mean you buy the shoe, but you can understand the feeling of urgency of life and deathness,
right,
about fitting in, you know,
right.
or going to a party. And it doesn't mean you let them go to the party, but we have to begin with attunement, connecting with what's really going on. That's the SC, social engagement. Then there's novelty. This is the dopamine changes you talked about, Dan, where you're dropping basically baseline levels of this neurotransmitter and increasing release levels in the reward circuit of the brain. The downside of that is you can feel really restless. You can feel utsy and, you know, kind of bored. And you want to get that dopamine release to feel like you're doing something meaningful. And for nature, we think the reason this change happens is because novelty is one of the main releasers of dopamine. So what's new? Well, leaving home and going out in the unfamiliar world, that's novel. And nature's trying to get this adolescent ready to leave home. That combined with something called hyper-rational thinking, unfortunately, where you rationalize risk-taking behavior, you know, gets an adolescent three times more likely, and this is just scientific findings, to be seriously injured or die from a preventable cause. So I say to adolescents, I say, look, your parents' concern about your risk-taking behavior being dangerous is not a myth. It's an accurate concern they have based on accurate scientific data. Let's talk about what creates this risk in you, this novelty-seeking, this hyper-rational thinking, and then let's give you an inner compass so you can combat the risk-taking behavior, which is, by the way, amplified if you think your adolescent peers will think this wild, crazy, unbelievably risky thing you did is going to give you a higher status in your adolescent group, make it your membership even stronger, you know. So these things overlap, the social engagement and the novelty. So with an inner compass, which we develop in the book through these mindset skills, they don't have to give up morality for membership, and they can understand the drive for doing something thrilling, but but actually have a gut feeling or a heartfelt sense that says, you know, I'm not going to drive this car 100 miles an hour. And then finally, the CE of essence. So we have emotional spark, ES. SE is social engagement. N is novelty. The CE is basically, as the brain is remodeling, it's really structured in a way, and this is across all cultures. In our center, we studied this at UCLA. You know, all cultures, basically adolescent people, human beings, they push against the status quo. And you can say, well, why do that? Well, the world is forever changing. And let's face it, Dan, we as adults, we find our niche in the world. We get our work. If we're fortunate, we set up a family. And, you know, we come home, we're kind of tired, you know. But the world is forever changing. The major innovations that deal with that changing world in, you know, science and technology and even in music and art, they come from adolescent minds, because the adolescent mind is literally programmed to push against the adult status quo that they're handed. That's as a human family, so we can be as adaptive as possible, not just accept things as they've been adapted to in the world, but the world is changing. So we as adolescents, we're the ones where the responsibility comes really to think outside the box and try new solutions. So I think if a school system were to harness that courage, tap into that creativity, build on the emotional spark, the passion, the social engagement, have kids collaborate with each other in adolescence, not just compete with each other to get into some, you know, competitive this or that, and work with them in novelty, we can tap into this creative exploration, the CE of essence, and really not only support the motivation of adolescence, but even, I think, come up with some new solutions to some of the world's most vexing problems.
Wow. That's a lot. I need to go over a couple of things with you, Dr. Siegel, about all that you've just said, especially on risk-taking and rational thinking and the impulsive nature of adolescence, of teens, before we even get to this, to the good part again. So we'll come back. I want to go over a couple of things with you and then move forward into what you were just talking about, the potentialities of using the changes taking place in the adolescent brain for our benefit. So we'll take a break here and come back and talk some more with Dr. Daniel Siegel. His book, Brainstorm, The Power and Purpose of the Teenage Brain. This is Dan Rodericks. You're listening to Midday. A short break. We'll be right back to follow up. And we're back with Dr. Dan Siegel from UCLA, best-selling author of The Whole Brain Child and Parenting from the Inside Out, now out this year with Brainstorm, The Power and Purpose of the Teenage Brain. So I need to go over a couple of things with you, because for a lot of parents listening who've been through this or are about to go through it or are going through it now, this is important, I think, a source of conflict. And that is, going back to the beginning of the show, my friend who said, you know, his boys were idiots because of the risks they would take, the stupid things that they would do in his mind. Seeing your sons or daughters as impulsive, not thinking things through clearly, not being rational. The dopamine, you know, the dopamine is certainly, as you describe it, an important factor in adolescent behavior or misbehavior. So, okay, it's one thing to understand what's happening, Dr. Siegel. It's another thing to be there in real time and deal with that, you know, bad decision-making, risky behavior, doing something because it's a thrill and not realizing that it might get you killed. This is a tough intersection of things for parents and their teenagers.
It's very tough, you know, and people asked me after I wrote Parenting from the Inside Out, my kids were young, to write a book on being a parent of a teenager. And I said, you know, my kids are entering their teenage years. Impossible. I have no idea what's going on. And so when you're in the heat of it, you know, it is really frightening. And there are things that happen that are so baffling. And I think my motivation to write the Brainstorm book was for people who were in the middle of it, whether an adolescent or an adult, or people who are anticipating it. Or, you know, what's been interesting is some adults have read the book who don't have adolescents currently in their lives, but they once were adolescents, and they wanted to make sense of what happened to them, you know?
Right.
Because this essence, it turns out, is not something you want to just get rid of. If you hold on to it, your life as an adult will actually be much better. So what's the purpose of this risk-taking? You know, I talk about a lot of the science of risk-taking so you can understand that, yes, in the early teen years, let's say, you know, 12, 13, 14, these early adolescent years, the beginning of the teen times, impulsivity is an issue where you act without thinking. But risk continues even after impulsivity goes away. You know, 15, 16, 17, the risk is still there. So you say, well, hold on then. So impulsivity is part of the story in the beginning, but if it goes away and risk is still there, it's not the whole story. So that's another myth we have to dispel. It's not just impulsivity. When you look at the dopamine changes, you can understand where getting that dopamine released is a drive of the deep circuits of the brain. Novelty does that, so trying new things, thrilling things that you've never done before. You get a new car, you drive 100 miles an hour. I mean, sadly, and I start the book with this story, you know, my favorite teacher from my psychiatry training was killed by a 19-year-old going 95 miles an hour on a surface street. And I always said, because my son was about one around the time, I said, is there something I can do as a parent in raising him so that I can give him some kind of something so he won't be that 19-year-old behind the wheel? You know, and he's now in his mid-20s, and I can say that, you know, what my wife and I had in mind was to give him an internal compass so that now we know that dopamine system, which goes basically from the lower parts of your brain to the middle parts to the upper parts, interacts with the evaluating middle parts of the brain that basically evaluate, is it good to drive 100 miles an hour or not? And the higher part of the brain that makes the ultimate decision about, yes, I'll do it, and actually controls your foot to press down on the accelerator, that's the cortex, the higher part of the brain, mm-hmm. those are all being influenced by this dopamine system. So what we can say about adolescence is that, you know, there's a drive to try new things that's beyond impulsivity. You can even plan to drive that car 100 miles an hour. And there's got to be something else besides even your cortex where the thinking is, and the reason they call it hyper-rational is you're rationalizing, and follow this logic, you know, if I drive 100 miles an hour, it'll be really fun. My friends will think I'm awesome. Those are both true. It'll be exciting, and my friends will think I'm awesome. Fine. And let's say there's a 30% chance of me crashing. Well, there's a 70% chance I won't crash. And let's say that's even true, although usually it's even much less likely the bad thing will happen. So adolescents actually overestimate their risk. And people say, oh, no, adolescents think they're, you know, impervious to danger. No, they actually know they're very vulnerable. They don't care about that. That's the issue.
Right, right.
When you study adults, adults are just as feeling that nothing bad is going to happen to them as adolescents. So that's another myth we can dispel. But here, what we want to say is that if I'm the adolescent, watch the logic of this. I say, Dan, the likelihood, the probability, that is, it's over 51% likely that everything will be fine if I drive 100 miles an hour. Now, that is a true statement when it comes to being rational. But there's a 30% chance that if something bad does happen, of course, it's dire. In this case, it killed my teacher. So that kind of hyper-logical, mathematical calculation doesn't have the what's called the gist, the feeling in the gut, the feeling in your heart that says, oh, even though it's kind of logical, the likely outcome is it'll be fine, my gut tells me don't do it. My heart is saying don't do it. Now we know there's a set of processors around the intestine and heart, yet we never teach anyone really to tap into them. So in the book, what the pathway that I teach as an internal compass is I develop the skill for the adolescent reading the book or an adult to tap into literally a gut feeling or heartfelt sense that even though your cortex, the higher reasoning part of your brain, will say, yes, it's likely it'll be fine, your gut will say, ah, even though I'm thinking that, my intuition says, don't do it. And I'll bet if that 19-year-old
the parent yep. is the one who says, don't do it.
Well, see, exactly. So, this is why it's got to be
the conflict arises. What do you mean? Don't drive 100 miles an hour. There's a 30%
exactly.
chance you'll be killed or kill someone.
Well, right? Dan, so think about this. Since the adolescent brain exactly is designed to push against the status quo, you can have a cop having arrested this 19-year-old before or an adult saying, don't do it. And the adolescent brain is naturally saying, oh, forget that. Even the sign on the street that says 35 miles per hour, an adult put it up.
Right.
Right? So my suggestion in the book, and this is where we've got to change the conversation because the way it's going is not good. We can empower the adolescent literally to develop the skills. It's called interoception, perception of their interior. I'm telling you, the wisdom of their bodies, their heart, and their intestines, literally those organs of the body, will come up to the control center of the brain. We know exactly where it comes up, to the cortex. And they'll have a competing feeling, an intuition that says, even though my friends will think it's cool, even though it's very thrilling, even though it's likely everything will be fine, my gut is telling me, my heart is saying, don't do it. It's not my mommy telling me. It's not the policeman. It's not the sign on the street. It's me. Mm-hmm. So I am choosing myself to not do it. That's what I mean by empowering.
Okay. As far as the parent and the relationship with the teen go, we get the idea, again, maybe this goes back to one of the myths, that teens want to break away from parents, that the relationship, a teenager's relationship with his or her parents while all this is happening, it's very difficult. A lot of people know this from life, and they believe that their kids just want to break away completely. You don't think that's true?
Well, I think the way you're saying it is really helpful, because I think when we go to the extreme for an adult or an adolescent, there is a belief, yes, for me as an adolescent to be truly strong and, you know, developing the way I should, I need to push all adults out of my life, especially my parents.
Yeah.
So what I try to do in the Brainstorm book is say, you know, no, that extreme actually is not what we're looking for. We're looking for a change in the relationship so that adults and their adolescent offspring can actually maintain lines of communication that come from a place of respect and understanding. Right now, there's complete misunderstanding because no one was informed about what's actually going on. There's a lot of disrespect both directions. And I wrote the book for both adults to read and adolescents to read, so it would be like a common conversation that could be had so that, you know, I think there's incredible potential, even if you're in the middle of a crisis right now with your adolescent and you're listening to Dan and to me talk about this stuff, there's amazing potential for people to take a step back, take a deep breath, rethink your own experience as an adult in your own adolescence, think about your own relationship with your parents. There's a whole section in the book. There are four sections. One of the four sections is about attachment. You as an adult can learn deeply about how your own relationships were when you were an adolescent or a younger kid. And then you actually, as an adult, can bring a spaciousness to the way you communicate that's different from the fighting that was going on before. And I guess partly, you know, since I'm an adolescent and a child and adult psychiatrist, you know, for my day job, I work with families. And since I've been doing this for decades, you know, I believe that a book can serve a role of being a mediator through insight and understanding and empowering the adolescent and empowering the adult. We can actually make the communication better. So it is not a matter that an adolescent needs to push parents away totally. They need to find connections with their peers, yes. And some adults, you know, they feel rejected. I remember I felt rejected when my teens were starting to push more toward their friends. And, you know, I'd say, let's go to the movies. And my daughter would roll her eyes at me and, you know, and she'd go, what? She goes, I'm 13. I'm not going to the movies with you.
Yeah, right. Hey, there's something else I wanted to ask you about. In the time remaining, I have two things I wanted to cover. One was the word empathy comes up a lot when I'm thinking about this, or lack of empathy that the adolescent suffers from, I think. I think it's a deficit disorder. We've heard it described as a empathy deficit disorder, especially among teens and adolescents, that they're so self-focused, self-centered. Do you think that's true?
You know, I think studies suggest there is a period of time during adolescence where reaching out and understanding the inner life, especially of adults, but of other people, can be challenged. I would put it that way. I wouldn't call it a deficit. I would call it a part of the remodeling. The very parts of the brain that are remodeling, in fact, include a number of what are called regulatory areas, and one of those ways of regulating is our relationships, and we regulate through empathy. So it's understandable in a reconstruction site that sometimes you have to turn the electricity off.
Hmm.
It doesn't mean the electricity is defective. It means you're rewiring the house, so you got to turn the lights off.
Yeah.
And I think adults and adolescents too need to respect that it's remodeling. It's not a disorder. It's not a deficit. It's a remodeling
period.
You
worry that it won't come back. You worry that the lights won't come
you
back
do.
On. You will end up with a child who is not empathetic.
Right, right. And so you need to especially be giving space for that. And, You know, I've been there with two of my kids. I know exactly what you're talking about that. But I can tell you it comes back beautifully, and it's different timing for females and males. And I even have a story there of a friend of mine whose son, you know, went through that and suddenly arises and comes in through it. I would think of it as remodeling, and take a deep breath as a parent that it's not a problem.
Okay.
It's just a remodeling period.
And Dr. Siegel, one of the most interesting conclusions that you reach, I think, is that adolescence goes on a lot longer than most of us thought. And, you know, a lot of us figured, well, the worst will be over by the time high school's finished, right? 18.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's not so.
No, that's another myth. You know, when your 19th birthday is done and you enter your 20s, you know, after that year of being 19, it's not the end of adolescence. Adolescence, we know, goes into the mid-20s. Some people are even saying to the late 20s. Why do we say that? When you look at the scans of the brain, this remodeling continues on at least to the mid-20s. Now, it may be dependent on cultural experiences. So we can say, at least in North America, in our culture, this is generally the way we're finding it. If you went to a culture like in Papua New Guinea, maybe it would be different. But for now, what we could say is, from what we know, it goes in the mid-20s. Now, that's from the brain point of view. From the essence point of view, what I want to suggest for not just adolescents listening, but for adults, is if you picked the study that shows how you as an adult can keep your brain young as you grow, so that as we go through the lifespan, our brain is continually growing. If you had to pick the top four features to keep your brain growing well and giving yourself a vital life, it would actually be the four of the essence of adolescence. Mm-hmm. Keep passion in your life with an emotional spark. Keep social networks of support with social engagement. Try new things with novelty, and challenge your mind with creative explorations. So amazingly, if you look at the essence of the adolescent brain remodeling, you could make a proposal, which I do in the book, that, hey, if you've lost the adolescence, which the essence of adolescence, which many adults did, they kind of got rid of it and said, I'm done with my adolescent period.
Right.
Sadly, it's not a good thing for you. You should get it back. And in the book, you can actually get your essence back. And that's what's been so fun about this, is that both for adolescents and adults, we can work together to keep this essence alive and well for the benefit of not only ourselves, but the whole world.
We've been hearing from Dr. Daniel Siegel, neuropsychiatrist, professor on the clinical faculty at the UCLA Medical School, and author of his new book is Brainstorm, The Power and Purpose of the Teenage Brain, published by Tarcher, an imprint of Penguin. It's been great to have you on the show, and thank you so much for this conversation and the book, Dan Siegel. Thank you.
Dan, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And thank you, everyone. That's our midday for today. Dan Rodrigues for our staff here at WYPR. Thanks for listening. See you again soon.
Midday senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer and director is Jonathan Ahrens. The associate producer, Michael Himowitz. Our interns are James Daly, Tom Cartaxo, and Michelle Richardson. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming available at WYPR.org. Dan Rodrigues' column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.